Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. Well, this evening our guest is Mr. John Field, and he has an amazing story to tell you, a story that really should be heeded by everyone in the listening audience. But before we get to that, let me mention, for those of you who will listen to our shortwave programs, our afternoon program, as of a week from today, the 15th of January, the frequency will change to 9.480. That's for the afternoon program, and this evening program that you're listening to will change to 5.755. So that's 9.480 and 5.755, and of course we hope that you'll get there and you'll tell your friends to be sure to listen to our continued shortwave broadcast. Of course, you can hear us on the internet. You can hear us on Telstar 5, and then, of course, you're listening to radio programs all across America right at this time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we certainly want to mention that John Field is our guest, and John actually was working on what was known as the pile. It was the rubble that there where the Twin Towers had come down on September 11th. And there were a number of strange things that happened that day. First of all, we were never told. In fact, all of the investigations of what happened that morning specifically deleted any information about the fact that there were military exercises that morning that simulated a hijacked plane crashing into an American building. And somebody was planting false images on the radar screens of the FAA, of NORAD, so that they didn't know really what was going on. There was a planned program to confuse so there could not be an adequate response, and there was no reason for those planes to be able to fly as they did, except for the fact that somehow or other there was a stand-down order that nothing was to be done. Everything was planned confusion. What are the chances that they would have had a military exercise that morning that simulated terrorist hijacking planes, and they've been able to suppress that information? Well, it came out in an article in Vanity Fair a couple of months ago, Michael Bonner's article, and you'll find it in a number of books. James Bovard's A Pretext for War, Michael Rupert's Crossing the Rubicon book, and then there's one by Webster Tarpley. And then, of course, the way that the buildings fell. They fell at the speed of gravity. In other words, had they come down normally, and assuming we've been told the truth, you would have thought that the strong support that was there in the buildings would have at least slowed the collapse. But they fell at the speed of gravity. There was absolutely no resistance, and well, many people questioned that could not have happened simply by accident. And then, of course, the story of the passports. One passport was recovered from adjacent to the North Tower, one at the Pennsylvania site. How could those passports have escaped intact when, of course, 1,100 bodies were never recovered from the Twin Towers? They simply were vaporized. They've never been recovered. What happened to those 1,100 bodies? Well, I'm going to talk to John because he was there, working there. John, how long were you working on the pile?
5 days.
And what was your actually a job? Were you working with the fire department or were you working with some other support group?
I was a supervisor in a demolition company.
Now, of course, were you told that you should be wearing a mask or that were you told that there was a danger of toxic dust?
No one ever said once, put on a mask, it will save your life or it will help you.
All right, fine. Well, at what point did they finally come around and suggest that people should be wearing protection?
I was, on the fifth day. I got there on the 12th, so I got hurt on the 17th, but on the fifth day of working there. I was already in the hospital when they it was mandatory for them to wear masks. I spent 2 months in the hospital after my injury on the 17th, so I was already long gone. But no one ever said put on a mask.
Well, what was it like when you got there? Could you sort of describe it for us?
You know, if I look back now and if I shut my eyes, I could still smell Ground Zero. It's something that will be tattooed forever in my senses, whether it's in my, you know, on my mind or in my brain or my smell, it was the most surreal thing I've ever seen. Just going there, and seeing that cloud and knowing that you were going into the cloud was the most amazing thing I've ever, you know, encountered and have been part of.
Well, now, you say you worked for a demolition company. What was that all about? Were you work for a company that actually took down buildings, or what?
We didn't do implosions. We did machine or by hand demolition.
I see. Well, how is it your company then was called in at that point?
Cleanup.
You were just part of a major cleanup crew. Now, then, what were the firemen doing? Were they helping with the cleanup, or were they searching for victims?
Well, actually, by that time, I was hired for cleanup and recovery. I wasn't hired to rescue anybody. But, you know, in the process of recovery, you know, whether you find people's personal belongings or body parts or stuff that was in the building that belonged to officers that were in the building, that fell under recovery.
All right, fine. Well, we've heard that, you know, certainly, no, and I don't know whether it's true or not, that there were not a lot of computers and things like that that were still intact. In other words, that they weren't simply, you know, squashed down. It was like they were just sort of destroyed. Did you find lots of things that ordinarily would fit in the buildings, furniture, things like that?
No. I worked Site 7, which is probably the most controversial building of all of them to come down.
All right, so you weren't really on the World Trade, on the Twin Towers. You were on Building Number 7.
Right. Well, I mean, I had access. I was at the... I mean, they were a couple yards away from each other. You know, each pile was on top of each other. You know, but I mainly worked Site 7.
All right, fine. Well, there certainly weren't any body parts in Part 7. So I suppose everybody was out of the building.
No, there wasn't. But Building 5, which was next to Site 7, which was right next to the towers, did produce a 10-year-old girl's body that was pretty charred. That was on Saturday, I got hurt on Tuesday.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today, this evening, is John Field, who was with a demolition team that was there cleaning up, and he was there for 5 days, came in right after on the day after the attack, and was there for 5 days. He was hurt. He was working on Building 7. Now, certainly, things just were pretty well totally destroyed. Were a lot of the fellas coughing and manifesting some signs that they were coming in contact with toxic material?
Absolutely. People were coughing the first hour I was there, I was coughing. I've seen a lot of people cough. I've seen people coughing up blood. I've seen people vomiting.
Well, now, of course, you've done, demolition before. Have you ever seen anything quite like this?
No, sir.
What was your thought at the time?
At first, I was in awe. I mean, you know, it took a while for me to really gain my composure and know that I was being part of history. And I was hired there to supervise and delegate orders. And in the process of that, I was trying to just get to know my surroundings. And my surroundings were an unsafe workplace. From the time I was there until the time I got hurt, I complained to everybody that would listen to me that somebody is going to get hurt. It wound up being me.
And was it because there were holes, because it wasn't something solid to stand on? Was it that you didn't have the right equipment?
I mean, I think it was just a bunch of... being in the military, I believed in order, and I believed in discipline, and I believed in some sort of safe atmosphere, and none of that was produced in the first few days there. Once again, after getting hurt on the 17th, I left for the hospital. What they did after that, I don't know.
Of course, the thing is that you are working for a private company. They hear the building is hit on the 11th. And they have you then, by the following day, they have a team from your company in there beginning to clean up?
They had a lot of private companies there. There was over 60 contractors that were there to clean up. A lot of sub workers were there. There were four or five major construction companies hired by the city and the state to take a different sector of Ground Zero.
But now, wait a minute. But within 24 hours, they had the people there?
Pretty much, yeah.
In other words, certainly the buildings didn't come down until, what, maybe 10 or 11 o'clock that morning.
You know, Building 7 had some important offices in there.
Right. And you know, Building 7 didn't come down until about 5:20 that evening. And yet by early the next, how were you there early in the morning or fairly late in the morning?
Late.
All right. So by late the following morning, why, they already had teams in there to clean things up.
Absolutely.
And did you have any specific instructions as far as what you were doing? In other words, were you just supposed to be shoveling things, putting them into some sort of a containers to take them to the dump or what?
We were pulling the steel from the pile because that's all it was. The cement was disintegrated. There was no cement. The cement just turned into powder. It was basically just steel. Anything that was in the building, I mean, there was like some like a piece of paper from, you know, someone's letterhead or something, but there was nothing. There were no computers or phones or anything, you know.
Well, so, wouldn't you expect there'd be computers or phones? I mean, wouldn't you expect there'd be smashed, but they'd at least be there?
Yeah, I mean, I would expect something, but all I saw was steel.
Well, of course, certainly it was the steel in pieces, or was it, certainly it was a 47-story building, so some of those pieces should have been pretty long, were they?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Those pieces of steel were the biggest steel I've ever seen.
And were they 47 stories high, or did they break apart at certain levels, or what?
Some of them were, when we pulled them for the pile, were hundreds of feet long.
They really were?
Yes.
All right, fine. And so there were lots of pieces of steel there that were hundreds of feet long. Do you know if that was the case on the Twin Towers as well, the very long pieces of steel?
Absolutely.
All right. Now, Sydney, this idea that the cement had turned into dust, isn't that sort of an unusual thing with a spontaneous collapse? I mean, certainly you would see that with a controlled demolition, but with a spontaneous collapse?
I'm not an expert on that, but listen, you know what? Everybody's got their theory. I'm not shocked if somebody told me these buildings were imploded. I saw the tapes of the explosions and the cloud of smoke underneath the towers before they came down. Am I sure about the towers? I'd be 50-50. But on the on Site 7 and watching the tape on how that came down, and just doing construction pretty much the last 20 years, I got to say 90%. I'm pretty sure that somebody helped that building come down.
Okay, well now, of course, how soon after you got out of the hospital, did you begin to have pulmonary and other symptoms referable to the toxic material that you'd inhaled? Or was this when you were in the hospital where you were starting to have symptoms?
I had the wheezing cough in the hospital, and but I didn't think anything of it because I was dealing with a physical injury at the time, which was pretty severe. My left foot was crushed by, they ripped it at about 8,000 pounds.
Oh, boy.
And I spent 10 days in Bellevue Hospital, and I developed gangrene. And then I was shipped to North Shore University in Plainview on Long Island, where I spent the next 2 months fighting for my life and my foot. I wound up losing half of that, though. But, you know, they say I'm alive and I'm lucky.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, you were in pretty good shape before this happened, weren't you?
That's
Hadn't
correct.
You been in the military? And
oh, I was in the military. I was always a jock, always an athlete. I wrestled for 17 years, judo, golf, softball, flag football. So, but once again, I was dealing with that physical injury, and then I was dealing with the post-traumatic. The first year out of the hospital, the depression and the post-traumatic was, you know, really bad. I would say it was around the middle of 2002, 2003, where I addressed my breathing problems. And then as it got worse, you know, they said I had a scarred right lung and asthma.
And of course, you'd never had any trouble like this before.
No.
Now, did they attribute the scarred right lung and the asthma to, of course, the fumes that you'd inhaled when you were there working on the pile?
Well, they can't say it directly, but, you know, I didn't have it before 9/11. And it doesn't run in my family.
Okay, fine. But then you're not the only person. An awful lot of people have exactly the same sort of symptoms.
Well, you know, they want you to think it would be a coincidence or, you know, it's not because of 9/11. But you know what? When 100 people have it, when 500 people have it, when 14,000 people have it, it's got to, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Well, of course, we know. I've read articles about this one lawyer who has about 8,000 cases.
David Worthy.
But the interesting thing about that is over 400 of these people, over 400 of the 8,000 cases have cancer. Now, that could not have happened. There had to be something terribly toxic to cause 400 people who worked on the pile to come down with cancer.
Oh, I agree with you. Absolutely. You know, Officer James Sedroga, who died last year, and they did his autopsy, and he said he's the first one to die because of 9/11 exposure. June of 2005, Tim Keller passed away, and Tim Keller was a FDNY EMT. And I met Tim in 2002 at support groups, and we became friends. And this man used to bleed from the mouth. He would talk to you and bleed. I've never seen anything like that. And he would gasp for air like it was his last breath, and it really literally was. And when we went to Washington to fight for 9/11 rights, he was supposed to go with us that day. And the night before he called, said he wasn't feeling good. And that day we were in Washington, he passed away. So I take it personal.
Well, of course, Christine Todd Whitman, the head of the EPA, had encouraged everybody to get in there, get working, and told them there was nothing to worry about. Now she denies it, but I've actually heard recordings of her message that she put out right after 9/11, and people were just told just to go right ahead. There was nothing to worry about, weren't they?
Christy Todd Whitman should go to jail for manslaughter every time somebody dies from 9/11 exposure. Her moral compass is pointing in the wrong direction because she took orders from the White House on down. Condoleezza Rice's office signed off on Christy Todd Whitman's statement. They wanted to reopen Wall Street as fast as possible and show the world that, you know, we're a world power and we took one on the chin and we're ready to move back. And she lied, and she said the air was safe and the water was safe, and she lied. And she could have said, no, I'm not going to say that, or that's wrong, or we could rephrase that, but she lied. And because of that, nobody wore a mask or nobody took it as serious as it should have been taken, and she should go to jail for that. And she's not the only one.
All right. Well, of course, what about the people there in the city administration, Mayor Giuliani's office, and certainly the public health officials in New York? Did they know what was going on?
Absolutely. Mayor Giuliani was made out to be a hero, and he profited from 9/11 more than anybody. His pockets got bigger. You know what? He's running for president, and I say this. How can this man help the people of this country when he couldn't help the people in New York? And I got a problem with elected officials who are sworn in to serve and protect, and they did the complete opposite.
Well, I share your concern, and I just think it's so tragic that there's so many people. You think there were about 14,000 of the people who work there have some residual pulmonary or other maladies because of their work?
Well, Mount Sinai's treated about 15,000 9/11 responders, but that's not counting the 9/11 responders from all over the country that came to New York to help out, that went home and got sick and don't realize they're sick. And I know dozens that live outside of the state of New York that are sick that haven't had Mount Sinai screening. So if they say 40 to 70,000 people worked the pile and they're only saying 15,000 are sick, because those are the 15,000 that were tested, in my mind, there's probably more out there that are sick and just don't realize why they're sick.
Well, I think it's really one of those great tragedies. It wasn't only the almost 3,000 people who died that day, but the other people who have residual injuries, and they have them as a direct result of the fact that the people, highly placed people like Christine Todd Whitman and Mayor Giuliani and the public health officials in New York, simply lied to the people and said it's perfectly safe. You got nothing to worry about. You can trust us. And I think an awful lot of people regret the fact that they ever trusted Mayor Giuliani and Christine Todd Whitman and the other government officials. Well, John, certainly, These 8,000 people that are being represented by the lawyer, are they, are many of them actually completely disabled, or some of them partly disabled? I know that many of the men, of course, that they work with the fire department, the police department, and they were in excellent shape, and suddenly they're there for a few days or a few weeks, and now their whole lives are transformed. They're really pulmonary cripples. Would you like to comment on that?
Have you had the chance to meet 9/11 responders?
No, I really haven't. That's why I'm so glad you can be with us.
If you put a 9/11 responder in a room with a person, somebody not affected by it, you'll know that person right away by the way they gasp for air, by the way the post-traumatic affects them. David Werby's lawsuit, which represents every, cop, fireman, construction worker, whoever was down there. I am not on David Werby's lawsuit because I have a physical injury lawsuit of my own. But I've gotten David Werby about 300 clients, and I admire and respect everything he's doing, because he's literally David going up against Goliath, and he will win. There will be victory. And these guys, the fact that we have to even fight for benefits, let alone compensation, don't even talk the word compensation, just that we have to fight for the sole fact that we need our benefits to survive, because their livelihoods were taken from them, is an insult and is a crime against humanity.
Well, my understanding, of course, that ordinarily workmen would be entitled to workmen's compensation benefits.
Not so easy. An average person can get hurt working in Home Depot and have a box fall on their head and get workmen's comp faster than a 9/11 hero who risked their lives without prejudice.
Well,
that makes me sick.
Well, why is that? Is it they just they don't put the money up because it should be very, very
accountability.
Obvious. Pardon?
Accountability. It's all about accountability, isn't it? And responsibility, because once there's accountability and then responsibility, it's going to open the floodgates for everybody to come forward and collect, and then everybody's going to be broke like they say they're going to be broke. But this government has more money than we know what to do with. They just say they don't have any money.
Well, of course, they paid off the relatives of the people who died in the Twin Towers so that they wouldn't bring lawsuits. And, they wouldn't bring lawsuits against the airlines.
That with the September 11th fund. If you received the money from the September 11th fund, you weren't allowed to have a lawsuit. And I'll give you a quick, really little story here. I was denied by the September 11th fund twice. Now, before I even get into that, the average person who was a victim and was deceased that day, their family's got $2.3 million on average.
Right.
$2.3 million. The average person who was sick or injured got $463,000. When I applied for the September 11th fund, I asked for $50,000. $50,000. And I got a letter stating, "We're denying you, and although your injuries were catastrophic and life-threatening, you don't qualify because of the time frame of your injury." After the 15th, they said it wasn't a terrorist attack anymore, and I didn't qualify for the September 11th fund, which I, at the time, was devastating. But if I look back now, I'm kind of glad, because I wouldn't be able to have my lawsuit, which I'm already in negotiations with.
Well, now, who are you bringing the lawsuit against? Would that be the employer? Would that be against the Port Authority or what?
I'm suing Turner Construction for negligence.
All right, fine. So basically, this is a whole lot. We'll be right back here in just a moment with John Field. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was talking about the fund. Remember, there were billions and billions of dollars that were put aside for the families of the victims of 9/11. The average family of a victim of 9/11 got about $2.3 million. If they were injured, they got well over $400,000. But of course, after the 15th, and John was injured about the 17th, why, that was no longer considered part of the terrorist attack, and so his only recourse, of course, was to actually try to bring suit against his employer, and hopefully he's going to be able to come out with some sort of a compensation. You lost part of your foot, as a result of this. Can you get around pretty well, or is it pretty tough?
Well, before I get to my feet, after I was denied by the September 11th fund because of the time frame of my injury, my lawsuit was thrown out of court the first time around at the state level. because New York State said it was still a terrorist attack up until the 29th. So anybody technically fell in that window between the 15th and the 29th wasn't eligible for any sort of compensation. So in 1951, Congress signed an act saying if you're hurt during a terrorist attack, you're not eligible for compensation, which was a joke. So now my lawsuit went from state to federal, where I'm actually doing a lot better. And now that Judge Hellerstein is overseeing these 9/11 cases, he's letting them go through. Not to say that they're going to win, but at least we'll get our day in court.
Now, is he the same judge who will be hearing cases of the 4,000, or the 8,000 people?
Correct.
That are being, okay, so that there are a lot of lawsuits that are being brought as a result of the people who are injured there. Now, in addition to your foot, are you having a lot of pulmonary problems?
Not as bad as other people.
All right, fine. So,
I have not taken a pill. I've had dozens and dozens of surgeries. I've had almost 30 surgeries. I can't even count, 30, 32, on both feet. I have heel spurs and plantar fasciitis now from the way I walk, because I compensated with a limp from losing half of my left foot to grinding my heels down on both feet. So I've had so many surgeries, and then I've had reconstructive surgeries on my left foot just so that it would be normal and function. And then, you know, the post-traumatic, everybody, you know, saying you got to take this pill and take that pill. I have yet to take a painkiller, and I have yet to take anything. They drugged me up for 2 months in the hospital, and I swore it off that I would never take it. I do take one pill a day, and that's for the hiatal hernia, which causes the acid reflux and GERD, which 99% of all 9/11 responders have.
Now, why would that be? Do you have any idea?
Whatever we swallowed, who knows?
And so there was something there that really, you know, when 99% of the people who were there had this reflex problem as far as their stomach is concerned, there's got to be some common denominator behind it.
Yeah, we swallowed a toxic cocktail full of chemicals that, you know, have cut our life short. Listen, you know, that cement, the powdered glass from every light bulb that was crushed, the mercury from every computer that was crushed, that was all mixed into one, and we inhaled it. And then they gave us a chaser to shoot it down with bullshit and lies, excuse my language, and we had to swallow that on top of it. So, I mean, you know, we got the double whammy. And, I mean, unless you're a fan of mass murder or genocide, our government, which claims to be the greatest in the world, is letting its own heroes pass away and die.
Well, I certainly share your concern about what's going on. Well, would you mind if we saw if some people out there would like to give us a call?
Absolutely.
Well, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in, for John Field is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And John is on the front lines of this battle to try to get compensation for the people who, really, many of them were seriously incapacitated, and so many of the people who were there, certainly for a long period of time, are pulmonary cripples, and this is the great tragedy. And the fact is that they knew the air was toxic, and they simply lied to them. Now, after the 5 days, you said they told people they should wear a mask, but didn't they really need respirators, something more than just a face mask?
The paper mask that they handed out was so insufficient for what was really... Everybody should have been given a respirator. Everybody should have been given what the people at the Pentagon were wearing. But that didn't happen.
Well, my understanding is that the government, the federal government, sent in teams there, but they were all decked out, you know, and you know, complete covering, you know, with face masks and you know, respirators, and you know, just so that they didn't come into contact with anything. So these were the federal employees who were there.
Listen, when I was I saw OSHA, I saw the EPA, I saw every government agency at Ground Zero that you can name off the top of your head that has three letters in it, and they all had a mask on except for us.
Okay, fine. Now, were they wearing respirators or just masks?
Both.
Okay, hold on. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is John Feel, and his website, I believe it's the Feel Good Foundation, isn't it, John?
That's correct. It's F-E-A-L, good, foundation.com.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And right now we've got Joe calling us from Wisconsin. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan, and your guest, John.
How are you doing, Joe?
Since your company was responsible for the cleanup of Building 7, did they give any explanation for the pancake collapse if everything turned to dust and steel? I would think that in order to collapse something, you would have to have something heavy, and dust really wouldn't do that.
I agree with you. No. No one gave us anything. We were the third people down in the pecking order. So while Turner Construction owned that sector of Ground Zero, it was Seasons Contracting and then Diversified Contracting. So we were subbed out. So we never got that vital information. We were just told to clean that pile.
And I think the interesting thing is, Joe, that I hear that building came down at 5 o'clock in the evening. By late the next morning, was it the next morning or next afternoon that you were there?
Next day.
Was it
late that evening.
Late that evening. So the following day, that's on the 12th, while they were already in there. That is amazing that they were able to get all these demolition groups in there to start the cleanup within 24 hours. It truly shows amazing government efficiency
But it also shows you that the average American that wanted to come down there and help, that shows you what we're made up of. This isn't a great country because of our government. It's a great country because of the people that came to the aid of New York.
Amen to that, that's for sure. Anything else you wanted to ask, Joe?
Well, I just wanted to say that I wish him well in his lawsuit, and I just thought it was a miracle of timing that they got rid of all that steel maybe 3 weeks later, I think. But there were still liquid deposits sitting in the bottom.
Site 7 was cleaned in 6 weeks.
It really was?
Yes, sir.
Of course, you know, there's been a lot of talk about some molten metal over there in the Twin Towers in the basement. So, was there anything like that in Building 7? Because you wouldn't really know. But I was just talking to the people who were there after you left.
Well, Building 7 had all the gold bullions in it. It had the firing ranges in it. You know, we found a lot of weapons. A really quick story. About 4 hours before I got hurt, I was just driving a Bobcat to clean the street up.
Well, hold that thought for just a moment. We're going to have the radio stations on right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Feel. His website is feelgoodfoundation.com. That's F-E-A-L, goodfoundation.com. And John is telling us that, you know, that certainly when they were cleaning up Building 7, there was a lot of gold in the building. What it was doing there, we don't know. But then, of course, he said a lot of weapons in the building. And he was driving a Bobcat to sort of clean things up. And pick up the story there, John.
I was driving a Bobcat. So for every 12 hours, we were pumping out about 250 trucks. We were just loading steel on whatever would back in. Whether it was a pickup truck, a flatbed, a box truck, anything. Whoever can carry steel, we were loading it. So I would take the Bobcat and clean the street so the trucks wouldn't get flat. And as I was driving the Bobcat and scraping the concrete, I pushed a metal plate that was covering an 80-foot drop into the subway. The Bobcat was teetering on this hole, and I was facing down. And I honestly thought I was going to die at that moment. Until somebody came over with a larger machine, a payloader, and picked me up in the Bobcat, and the Bobcat's a 12,000-pound machine, and he saved my life, and his name was Kenny Larson.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, the thing is that, but you say that many of these pieces of steel were they 100 feet long or a couple of hundred feet long? Because that's certainly a 47-story building. It'd be awful high.
If I look back, I would say they were 1,000 feet, but, you know, my imagination runs wild. But, I mean, I've seen 100, 200-foot piece of steel.
All right. Were they having to cut these so they could begin to pick them up?
We would pull them from the pile, put it on the street, torch them, and then load them on the truck.
Okay, fine. And so you cut them into what length pieces?
Depending on the truck size.
So they could be 50 feet long, 100 feet long?
Not after they were cut. They were cut, they were anywhere from 10, 20 feet.
Okay, fine. So basically,
the steel, when it was on the side, was 6 feet high. It was just massive steel.
And you wonder how that could possibly have come down in the way we've been told. Anyway, of course, your job was, you were there to get this cleaned up as quickly as possible. Your job was to get the steel out, and of course, to get the cleaned up as far as the dust. And it was just sort of dust every place, wasn't it?
But the fire department was shooting water from the top of the buildings. While we were pulling hot debris from the pile, the firemen were shooting water on us. But every time the water hit the water would bounce off the steel and hit us, and we would get little red burns on our skin.
Well, was the fire still burning at this time?
Yes.
When you were there?
Absolutely.
What was burning, though? It sounds to me like there wasn't a lot to burn.
The steel was just smoldering hot.
How could you're talking about a couple of days after the fire. Why would the steel be so terribly hot?
I can't answer that. I honestly don't know, but I know some of the machines, the windows on the machines, when they got close to the piles, they were just melting.
So there was tremendous heat there. What more do you might expect just from a regular fire?
Absolutely. There are just some things I cannot explain, and, you know, I'm just telling you what I saw.
That's all we can ask you. Joe, did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
No, just good luck, because I hear vets every day saying they get the same treatment.
Yeah, well, of course, the thing is that there is a large lawsuit being brought, and I just hope and pray that the people who are there will be compensated, because many of them are permanently disabled. And how many of them have died? Do we have any idea, John?
David Werby will tell you that about 300 and something of his clients have passed away. I know personally people that I've come in contact with. When I say I know them personally, I know six people.
You know, six people have died, and he says, the lawyer says, about 300 people have passed away, but 400 of them, are still living, have cancer, which means that there's something else terribly toxic there.
That number's higher.
It is even higher than that?
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. Okay, Joe, anything before we let you go?
No, that was it.
God bless. Thanks so much for calling.
Thanks,
Joe,
sir.
Incidentally, are you listening on shortwave or internet? I guess we lost Joe. Well, let's go to Mary, who's calling us from upstate New York. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
Hi, good. How are you all?
I'm doing fine. Are you listening on shortwave, internet, or the station up there in New York?
Internet.
Okay, very good.
Nice and clear.
All right.
Yeah, I have two questions for him and then a couple of observations that I've just discovered. The asbestos, I'd heard that it was full of asbestos and it needed to come down because of that. Would that have caused some of the, problems for breathing?
Absolutely.
And then also...
The people that built the towers in the late 60s and early 70s, they have asbestos problems. You know, a lot of them are dying from asbestos cancer. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, so when the buildings came down, you know, there was a lot of asbestos.
Now, did you say that you were injured on Saturday and that the building was still smoldering hot on Saturday?
I was injured on Tuesday, the 17th.
Oh, on Sunday.
That was 5 days later.
And it was still smoldering.
17th would have been 5 days after it occurred, and it was still hot as it could be.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
So there's something that's very strange about this whole thing, and certainly we've heard, in the Twin Towers that there was bolted metal in the basement, and there had to be something that caused the basement, the molded metal in the basement. Anyway, Mary, we don't know, and I'll tell you what, we're not getting the truth. The information is still classified, and Professor Stephen Jones of Brigham Young University had tried to see the information that was used by this organization that the government paid to come up with a report that they came up with after 5 years, and they said, oh, yeah, it was just like you've been told, but all the information is classified. And Professor Jones was told the only way he could see it if he signed a non-disclosure agreement that he would never tell anybody what he saw, which he refused to do. I mean, why are they have this information classified? Are they trying to keep Osama bin Laden from knowing why those buildings came down? Anything else, Mary?
Yeah, I just read an e-book. It's called Vatican Design Exposed, and it's you can go to www.vaticandesignexposed.com. It's only 40 pages, but I think it pretty much will fill in the gaps of whatever questions you have about what's really going on in the world completely. It's kind of mind-boggling, but it's like, for me, everything's starting to make total sense now.
Well, have you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness?
I haven't. I haven't gotten through it yet.
Your assignment, Mary, before you can call again.
I have to find it first.
You've got to read that book, and we address that issue. Certainly there are problems in all of the religious organizations, not just in the Catholic Church. But they're certainly within the Protestant church.
Well, it doesn't just hit Catholic. It hits Rome. It really goes after the thing of Rome.
Okay.
Mary, for extra credit, Mary, you got to go to my website.
Okay, I didn't hear that. Please tell me it clearly and slowly.
It's feelgoodfoundation.com.
Feel good?
Feel good.
F-E-E-L-G-O-O-D.
No, it's F-E-A-L. That's my last name, Feel, F-E-A-L.
Okay.
So it's Feel Good Foundation, all one word, feelgoodfoundation.com.
Okay, good.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much,
Mary. Thank you so much. And bless
your assignment is to read my book, okay?
Okay.
God bless.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, our guest is John Feal, F-E-A-L, of the Feel Good Foundation. Mike, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I had two questions for John. One was, we've heard some reports about some cleanup workers, female workers actually, wearing radiation protective gear. And I wondered if you saw any of that.
No, sir.
Okay. Number two, the columns, the steel columns that you're pulling out, before any of the cleanup workers did any cutting on those, did you get to see any of the ends of those columns? And you know what I'm getting at. Did they look like they had been, severed with demolition charges of any kind?
I honestly couldn't answer that. But a lot of them were clean, and a lot of them were just like somebody helped them come down.
Right.
So, once again, I never seen steel like that.
Yeah. Well, if the ends had clean cuts on them, that would be the charges. Otherwise, they should be twisted and shattered and things like that.
Some of them were twisted and shattered, and some of them were just too clean and perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, anything else, Mike?
That's it, thanks.
Okay, that was Mike calling from Santa Cruz, and then our telephone again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, And John certainly has been extremely incapacitated. John, have you been able to get back working at all or not?
No. I average about 2 to 4 surgeries on my feet a year. This past year in 2006, I had 2 more surgeries. I had a upper GI. The funny thing is, trying to get Social Security, I was denied by Social Security. And then my second time around, I got approved. But I got approved because 4 doctors diagnosed me with post-traumatic. And they thought I was crazy. But yet, I haven't taken a pill. And yet, I can form a foundation that helps 9/11 responders. And then I can turn around and go to Columbian Presbyterian. And I'm in the process now of donating a kidney.
All right, well, tell us a little about it. I know you're giving one of your kidneys to somebody who needs one. And I think that's very, very courageous and very idealistic thing to do. But tell us about some of the other people that you know. You say about 300 of them have died so far. Now, have they died from pulmonary problems? Have they died from heart attacks? Do we know why the 300? I mean, these are young, healthy people. Certainly that within the 6 years of the 9/11 attack, they should not be dying. So why are they dying? Do we know?
It's got to be the air quality had something to do with it. I mean, that's the basic common denominator. We all swallow the same thing. Everybody just has a different DNA and a different immune system.
Well, the thing is the mercury that's getting them? Is it the asbestos? Was there arsenic or something else there?
Absolutely. It was all of that. It was all of that combined in one. You got to keep in mind the average age of the workers were in their 30s and their 40s. And for all of these guys to have the same problems, it's just not a coincidence anymore. It is a fact that the air, those buildings all coming down and everything that was pulverized and crushed and into that toxic cloud was inhaled by all of these healthy, hardcore, macho men, whether they were cops, firemen, construction workers, and no one there had an $8 an hour job, and nobody there was, you know, somebody that they pulled off the street unless there was a volunteer that snuck in, and there were a lot of them, and they're brave people, God bless them. But these people's lives were cut short in their prime for doing something really heroic, and for the government to turn their back on them is a disgrace.
Well, I certainly won't argue with you at all. In fact, we've seen this with our servicemen, but that's an entirely different story. Under any circumstances, now tell us about the organizations that they have. Is there are there support groups? Are there regular organizations? Is there one organization? Several organizations? What's really going on with the responders?
There are so many now 9/11 organizations, whether from the survivors, from the victims, 9/11 responders, the cops, the firemen, everybody's got so many 9/11 organizations. And the problem is that nobody wants to share information with each other. When if all of these organizations all seek the same thing, which is the truth, that's the basic common denominator. We all seek the truth. And if everybody joined together, even if they don't like another organization, put their egos at the door, and join together, instead of being splintered all over, and join together, we would show the government mass numbers that cannot be turned away. But right now, the government has us splintered all over, and just scratching and clawing when we can be giving them a good knockout punch.
Well, did you ever have the feeling that maybe it was planned that way? In other words, that your whole movement has been infiltrated by people who are there to keep you fighting one another?
I believe that.
And certainly this is a standard technique. We see this today in the conservative movement. We see it in the Christian movement. We see it in all of the, many of the, even the, really the branches of the liberal movement. They're infiltrated. People come in. They'll take position of leadership. People are always looking for somebody else to put all the time in. And then pretty soon your whole movement's being neutralized and becomes totally ineffective. So
at the Feel Good Foundation, I stress to 9/11 responders that we are going to police ourselves while the government sits idle and doesn't help us. So when I help a 9/11 responder, I expect in return that he turns around and helps the next 9/11 responder. And whether we go out there and help them get workman's comp, Social Security, help them with paperwork, a lot of these guys don't know that they can get crime victims of New York up to $30,000. Or then I'll do a fundraiser and I'll give that money out right away to people that are in dire need of financial help. And I'm trying to stress that we're in a day now where government and politics and religion divide people. We're so divided as a country. And I'm just trying to stress to people that the goodness in each person, and we all have that gene, the goodness in people will unite. And the goodness in people is contagious. And if everybody just does a good deed for each other, then we'll be better off.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I think the fact that you're independent, that you can do this, and nobody's going to infiltrate the Feel Good Foundation because you're the Feel Good Foundation, and I think that this is very, very important. Well, right now we've got Roger calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Fine. Thank you, Jensen. I'd like to ask your guest about what I'd heard, like it was maybe about a year old now or so, where all the police, fire, the anonymous polling, was it Zogby or another firm, revealed that it was like 68% believed that it was a cooked job.
I heard the same thing.
All right, but see, really, that would not be something John would be an expert on.
I've heard the same thing he's heard. And I talked to, if I took an average of every 100 firemen I've talked to, 50 of them would say that.
All right, so I think that at least people are thinking out there, Roger. Incidentally, are you listening on shortwave?
You're doing very well here on 5.835, and I caught you well tonight on 7.490 earlier.
All right, fine. And Trish, now, would you check for me at 5.755? We should be broadcasting on that as well. That's 5.755, and just call back and let me know if that's coming through well, because that's where we're going next Monday.
God bless.
All right, fine. Thanks very much for calling. We've got Jack calling from Chicago. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. God bless you and your guest. I really empathize, and I'd like to ask him if by any chance he heard an announcement one day of a fight that broke out between firemen and so-called police.
Why would there have been a fight between firemen and police?
The tension between the two organizations, you can cut with a knife.
Really? Okay. So what is there any truth to Jack's story that there really was a problem there?
Absolutely.
Okay, fine. That answers your question, Jack. Anything else you'd like to ask?
No, that's it, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Okay, fine. All right, well, that was Jack. And actually, he calls from up around Detroit, I believe it is. Anyway, I'm going to be back here in just a moment. And, Chris, put your call in now if you'd like to. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got, at least 14,000 that we know of. And then there are people all across the country who came there to help, and of course I'm sure they've gone home, and many of them are ill as well. It's a great tragedy, another great human tragedy. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's John Feel of the Feel Good Foundation. John, of course, is trying to get compensation, trying to get a lawsuit so he can get on with his life. And he has, of course, predominantly problems with his feet as a result of a crushing injury that he sustains when he was working there on the pile. And, of course, this would have been on building number 7 where he was working. And do they have then different crews on each one? Because certainly there's buildings 3, 4, 5, and 6, as well as the Twin Towers in building 7. So they must have had then a large number of crews there, certainly the very day after the attack. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes.
And, of course, now were most of these private companies, or were most of them firemen, or most of them policemen, or were they just sort of coming from every place? And who was directing all of this thing? Because somebody had to be in charge. Was it FEMA or what?
FEMA and the city were in charge, but the non-uniform worker outnumbered the uniform worker.
All right.
3-1.
We had actually heard that there were actually, and I don't know if there's any truth to this, but there were some sort of a program there where they were sort of simulating some sort of major attack the evening before the 9/11 attack. Had you heard anything like that, that there were actually FEMA workers there before the 9/11 attack?
I never heard that.
All right, fine, and certainly there's lots of rumors, and we just want to have information that's accurate. And we have an opportunity to talk to Mr. Field, who is actually there. So if you're out in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to John, why, you know our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, I suppose that, this disability, formerly healthy, I'm sure many of them are very macho men. Are they having a lot of family problems as a result of their disability?
I've seen divorces. I've seen suicide attempts. I've seen drug rehab. I've seen alcohol rehab. I got some of the most depressing things I've ever seen in the last 5 years. Take away 9/11 and what I was there. The human side of it's destroying families. I kind of got lucky. I never got married and had kids. So I'll give you a quick example. I won't use a name, but NYPD, who happens to be a great friend of mine now, he was blinded by a body part. He was hit on the 11th by a body part. He was blinded for a few months, and he got his sight back. But
hold that thought. We'll be here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was just telling us that a man who's come to be a close friend of his was with the New York Police Department, and he was actually blinded when one of the body parts fell from above, and he got his sight back after, a couple of months?
Yes.
What happened to him, though?
He was hit in the head with a body part from the tower.
That would be just a horrible, horrible experience.
He eventually, last year, had triple bypass. He has severe respiratory problems. He's on the verge of being diagnosed with cancer. But on a personal note, a couple years ago, he tried to commit suicide. And he has an 11-year-old son who emulates him. Dad's his hero. So what's the next step for a son who emulates his dad is Dad tried to commit suicide. He tried to commit suicide. And now both of them are heavily medicated. And for anybody to go through that, when he didn't have to go through that, because if the state, the government, at every level, local, state, and federal, chose to help this man, he would not have been going through what he's gone through.
Well, John, did the fellow get hit by the whole person that fell out, or was this just part of the person that I had him, part of the body?
Part of the body.
How could Sydney, just part of a body, fall for the building? That doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I've never heard that before, but I'm not questioning it at all. I just think there's so many answered questions about what happened that day. Would you hang on here? And we got some more calls on the line. But right now I have to remind our listeners out there across America listening to us, if Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you appreciate what we do and you share my concern that there's far more to the story of what happened on 911 than we've been told, why we hope many of you will want to help us as we reach out across America on almost 60 outlets every single week. And give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because if you'd like to get certainly some of our newsletters, we'd be glad to send you at least one of them. You can go up on our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Let me suggest we've written a series, August, September, October, November newsletters are posted up there. You're welcome to pull them down and free of charge and copy them. The December newsletter will be coming out probably in another week or two, and this will conclude this series of newsletters on the truth about 911 is the title. And December is part five. What do we know about what really happened that morning and all the human tragedies that have come about? So we'll eventually put this into a little booklet, and we'll hope that you'll get this and copy it and disseminate it. We need to get people to understand what happened and never forget what happened on September 11th. Never forget until we can get an independent investigation and get everything declassified so that the American people can find out and what happened. And certainly the question is why at this date is so much information still classified? Who are we keeping the information secret from? Are we keeping it from Osama bin Laden? Are we keeping it from the American people? And if we're keeping it from Osama bin Laden, where is he? And why didn't we ever try to capture him? And why, if you go up on the FBI website, and you can go there, Google in FBI, and then 10 most wanted men, why is there nothing on the FBI website under Osama bin Laden that mentions the attack on the World Trade Center on September 11th? Check it out yourself. It's fascinating. Now, they may very well change it after we brought this out, but we do have the copies that are there now. And the FBI doesn't even mention, when they talk about wanting to catch Osama bin Laden, what happened on 9/11. Is it possible we have not been told the truth? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295. And our guest is John Field. Our website is RadioLiberty.com. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to read it, and you need to reread it. And you need to understand what is really going on today. There are a lot of information out there that will get you sidetracked. It's the Vatican. It's the Zionists. It's this group or that group. Find out the truth. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, today, this evening, our guest is John Field. And John was there at the working on the debris of the World Trade Center complex. He was working on building number 7. He's given us tremendous insight into what it must have been like, just massive amounts of dust. And, of course, the fascinating thing is that even 5 days after the fire, why, of course, the steel is so smoldering, and, of course, they're pouring water to try to cool down the steel, and it's still so hot. And, of course, there's nothing to burn at this point. There's nothing there but just the cement and the steel. And the steel, though, is so intensely hot, even 5 days later. And then, of course, the tragedy of so many people, the emotional stress, the illness now that at least we know of certainly 14,000 people are ill. There's one lawyer who has cases for about 8,000 people. And, of course, John is working with his lawyer, trying to get people so they'll have legal counsel and so they can get help, maybe get their lives back together. Well, we've got Ray calling from Santa Cruz. Ray, go ahead. Did you have a question for our guest?
Well, I have a question. It's sort of a comment, in a way. You know, about the Independent Study Commission that, you know, I think everybody would like to have, you know, for this horrible tragedy. Could there be any pressure made to get some of our congressmen and senators to get involved in this thing, you know, and to help out, you know, because they haven't helped out. And I'm kind of worried that, you know, if they don't help out, if nobody in the government cares one way or the other, you know, then we might as well not even have a government, you know.
Well, let me tell you that Congressman Weldon, Kurt Weldon, is really a very, very good congressman. He was certainly, I've forgotten what's one of the committees, but he was a key man, a longtime Republican. And he tried to bring out the story about Able Danger. It had to do with the fact that there was a military intelligence team that was monitoring Muhammad Atta at least a year before the 9/11 attack. And the government didn't want the information out. The 5 officers came forward to confirm that their unit had been tracking Muhammad Atta. They'd been blocked from giving their information to the FBI. The Pentagon destroyed the records. They wouldn't have let, of course, Colonel Schaefer testify before the Senate committee. He was ordered not to. And when Congressman Weldon tried to bring this story out, they immediately launched, the Justice Department launched, an investigation against his daughter and claimed that she'd been using her influence on Congressman Weldon, you know, to try to get special favors from him for her clients. And of course, they managed to defeat Congressman Weldon. And what was his crime? He was trying to bring out the truth about 9/11, at least one aspect of it. Any congressman who tries to bring out the truth will be attacked by the Justice Department. And what was amazing is why the Republicans destroyed a Republican congressman. They needed every Republican congressman they could get, but it was much more important to destroy Congressman Weldon than, of course, to re-elect a Republican Congress. So nothing is really as it appears to be, Ray. But we need, of course, why don't you write to our congressman, Sam Farr, and ask him to push for an independent investigation that will be done, you know, independent of the current administration,
right,
where they will have no say at all, and there will be members of Congress appointed there, but not anybody who have to be approved by the president.
Oh,
we'll be back in just a moment. All right, Ray, go ahead.
I had one other thing.
Okay, right ahead.
You know, as far as the fallout and everything, you know, and 9/11, there must have been quite a number of people that were affected by the whole thing. I mean, citywide, you know, throughout Manhattan, there probably a lot of people that were, you know, poisoned by the fumes and whatnot.
Let's get John's thoughts on that. John, were there a lot of people in the adjacent buildings who were, you know, got the full toxic effect? Are the people who came back to work, you know, promptly after the 911 attack, were some of the people working in the surrounding buildings affected by the toxic fumes?
Well, not only the people that worked the pile, not only the first responders and the people that worked there the weeks and the months after, but the people of Lower Manhattan and Brooklyn are now suffering with respiratory problems.
The surrounding
high schools, like Stuyvesant High School, which was right there at Ground Zero, a lot of those kids are now sick. Last year I had the privilege of going to an EPA meeting, and I got to meet a lot of the activists for the community leaders, and I helped fight the EPA with them and let the EPA know that they were a bunch of criminals in this whole matter. And I feel I'll go to bat for them, too. 9/11 has caused so much pain and suffering for just good New Yorkers and people around this country.
Yeah. Ray, what's so interesting, Ray, is that we're not hearing about this. You're not hearing about all the people in New York who are sick, and the kids who are sick. But then, of course, you're not hearing about the kids over in Iraq who are sick either from the depleted uranium, because they control the media. They can control our reality, and because they control our reality, they control what the American people think and believe. That's why programs like this are so important. But what a great tragedy when we must be talking about hundreds of thousands of people having some effect from this dust.
Right, and, it was so upsetting to me that, not to bring politicians or politics into it, but you know, they had the nerve to have the convention in New York City, you know, and that just made me mad. You know, I'm not against the Republicans per se, but I think that was terrible. They had a convention in New York City, a Republican convention, and there was nobody allowed to go near it, you know, near the building, and it was kind of like a slap in the face to New York, because these people, they're complicit in the whole thing,
Well, somebody's complicit, that's for certain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that's it.
Okay, that was Ray calling from Santa Cruz, and we'll be back here in just a moment. Of course, welcome your calls from out across America for our special guest this evening, Mr. John Peel. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Feel from the Feel Good Foundation. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And John was just saying that many of the children, young people from the local high schools in the area of the Twin Towers, many of them are having pulmonary problems, or what sort of problems are they having, John?
Yes, pulmonary, respiratory, post-traumatic.
Okay, and then, of course, a lot of the people in the surrounding buildings as well?
Correct.
Well, you know, this is really a great, great human tragedy, and of course, now you commented that you thought that there were about 14,000 people. Do you think there's a lot more than that?
Absolutely. No doubt in my mind.
All right, well, let's go to Will, who's calling us from Mississippi. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Oh, this is Missouri. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Dr. Stan and John. It's a great broadcast that you're doing tonight. The question I have for John is in regards to the EPA involvement and the work that they might have been doing there and any of the other environmental concerns that you would ordinarily see at a disaster. You know, we almost always have the World Wildlife Fund come out and Earth First and whatnot. The site was so close to the Hudson there that there should have been some concern about the water contamination. John, you went to a demonstration or a rally in regards to the EPA. In addition to other organizations, what did the EPA, what were they doing? Were they going around with their yellow suits on, picking up samples and bags and whatnot? What were they doing there? And what has been the presence of the other environmental, I like to call them the bugs and bunny groups, in the past years?
If they were there, they weren't doing their job. But, yes, I did see them. I saw their nice, colorful outfits. I saw their nice big letters on them, EPA. But what they were doing, I have no idea, because nobody was coming out and saying this air was not safe.
Well, but you saw them there. I mean, were they wearing any sort of protective gear for themselves other than respirators?
No, they were wearing respirators with big EPA signs on them. OSHA was there, CDC. Everybody was there.
Okay.
But, John, were they mapping? Were they collecting samples? Did they have a surveyor or any kind of like a locator running on the site where they would be able to do a robotic location? So they weren't mapping?
Not where I was.
They weren't mapping and they weren't collecting samples?
No, not that what I saw of.
Okay. Now, I've worked quite a bit of construction as well. When you were working this project, you were doing Building 7. Did each of the different construction concerns have their own trailers set up, and you guys are pretty well separated, or did you have common lunch areas?
It was pretty common. Upper management had trailers.
Yes.
And a command center.
Okay.
But if you weren't management, or you weren't wearing a suit, or you weren't that important, you would just eat lunch as you went.
Wherever you could sit down.
Honestly, it turned into a circus. I mean, I'm not even exaggerating this, but they were like McDonald girls carrying trays. You know, like in the old days when they had cigarettes and cigars on a tray?
Sure.
There were girls with like hamburgers handing them out. There were girls with like water bottles handing them out. I mean, it turned into a circus. And then they would parade in celebrities. And then they would expect you to stop working so a celebrity can come in there and take a picture, you know? And when I was there and a couple of celebrities, I declined to, I was like, leave, I didn't fall for any of that stuff, but, they were putting innocent 16-year-old, 17-year-old kids at home walking around with, a number two from McDonald's.
Right.
And it was a complete joke.
Now, other than the great big pieces of iron, what did the rest of the debris look like? Did it look like fireplace ashes? Did it look like sand, gravel?
No, there was no sand or gravel.
No, it was look like sort of like fireplace ashes. It looked like pulverized cement.
I didn't see no pulverized cement. I didn't see. That's just it. I didn't see cement.
What did you see?
Just piles and piles of steel.
It was all steel.
I know. What do you mean? The dust was all gone, or most of the dust was gone, or what?
It wasn't on the pile itself. I mean, there was dust on the street, or dust, on the buildings, and there was dust on each other, but there wasn't like mounds and mounds of dust.
So it's like more like going into a scrapyard.
Pretty much.
Okay, great. That's the answer I needed to hear. Thank you very much, John, and God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, fine. All right, well, let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I wanted to point out research that was done by Dr. Barry Sears, who's considered an expert in essential fatty acid research. I heard an interview with Dr. Ronald Hoffman of New York City, who has a show at night, and he interviewed Dr. Sears, and it turns out that the coal mine survivor of a year ago was brought back to life by the neurosurgeon Dr. Bales, using omega-3 fatty acids, something like 3 tablespoons a day. And I think Dr. Barry Sears would probably be a great guest to have sometime. The other thing I wanted to bring your attention to is there's a well-documented history of using ozonated water for all sorts of unresolved health challenges. And I think perhaps those two could really go a long way to helping John and his colleagues.
No, because you don't have any experience with it. Somebody ought to try it and find out. Before we recommend it. But anyway, Jack, thanks very much. And if you can get Dr. Sears' telephone number, why, you, of course, to send me the information. We do know, of course, that the essential fats are really very, very important. Dr. Nicholson's talked about that and how important those are for the lysosomes and for the mitochondria.
Yep.
These are certainly the fatty lipids. And, of course, what we're doing with our statins is simply, and we're giving everybody statins, and what do? Why, of course, they poison the liver and decrease the fatty lipids. And why would you do something like that? Well, there's not one study that shows it's going to significantly lower the death from heart disease. Well,
not only that, Dr. Stan, but the statin drugs are notoriously infamous in depleting the muscle tissue, of course, the heart's the most important muscle, of the necessary enzymes, coenzymes involved in energy production.
You're absolutely right, and that ties right into the same thing. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Jack.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay, let's, of course, try to skip on the subject. If you're out there and you have a question for our guest, John Field, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And as John is saying, he's there. And what is there? There's just a massive pile of steel. He doesn't see the dust. He doesn't see the wreckage of, certainly you would anticipate that, you know, if this was a collapsed building, why would it have collapsed and the computers would have been crushed and the telephones would have been crushed? And the desks of the various material that was in the building would have been crushed. Now, you did comment, of course, that there was gold in the building. What was that all about?
From what I was understanding to believe, there was a Federal Reserve there, or the ATF and the DEA who had built office buildings in there, you know, from their own stockpile of, I guess, whenever they did a raid or arrested somebody or stuff, it was all of their evidence.
All right, fine. And then, of course, you mentioned they had a lot of weapons there as well.
Absolutely. Underneath the building, there were like a lot of holes into the subways and a lot of holes under the building that we had a chance to go through. And we came across a firing range. We were pulling out, handguns and rifles.
Okay, fine. Well, let's see who our next caller is. They're going to be putting him up there. And it's Ed. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
And you're from Utica, New York?
That's right.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment for us?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I haven't heard you deal with while I've been listening. I'd like to ask your guest if there was anybody there with HAZWOPR training, hazardous waste. Training for dealing with hazardous waste, because that's something that is an ongoing thing to protect workers in hazardous environments.
If they were there, I didn't see them.
All right. Now, certainly, John, did you live in the New York area? How did it happen? Where did you come from when you got the call? You came from Ohio.
Long Island.
Oh, from Long Island. Okay, so this was a local company that you worked for then?
Correct.
Okay, fine.
But most of our work was done in the city.
Okay, fine. Anything else you wanted to ask, Ed?
I guess not right now, Dr. Stan. I sure am concerned about the survivors and of the workers. I've been concerned about that ever since, and especially under the circumstances.
Of course, what I've learned this evening is not simply, you know, the 14,000 or maybe we don't know how many thousands of the people that were actually working on the pile are ill, and how many, of course, came from other areas and have gone home and are ill, but the people in the surrounding areas and the fact that some of the children in school and some of the workers that are working adjacent to that went back to work and certainly would have come in contact with these toxic fumes. That they are ill as well. So there's a lot we have not been told. I assure that it's because we don't want Osama bin Laden to find out. Anything else, Ed, before we let you go?
Yeah, there was one thing that I was thinking. You know, there must be a lot of buildings around the country that have got these hazardous wastes, in them. And I think there ought to be a lot more information for construction workers or cleanup crews when they deal with issues like this.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll certainly talk to John about that. And thank you so very much, Ed. Incidentally, you're listening at the station there in Utica?
I did tune in on your, 5-point-something in a shortwave.
All right, is that the new one, 5.755?
Yeah, and I got a dial on my short wave, and so I presume it's that number.
Okay, fine. Got to let you go. Bye-bye.
Coming in clear.
Good. Okay. Hi. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and Chris, that was Ed, calling from Utica, New York. If you're out there Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And right now, of course, we're talking to John Field about pretty what it was like being there. And he just said it was just sort of like a madhouse. People were running around. But John, you've done demolition before. And going along with what Ed was asking, certainly, when you do take down a building, are you concerned about hazardous waste ordinarily?
Well, in the past, if we did a job and, say, we came across asbestos, we would stop the job, and then people would come in their suits and remove the asbestos so we can continue the demolition. But at Ground Zero, that wasn't present in my sight.
In fact, you couldn't even see anything there. There wasn't any asbestos you could actually see, was there?
No.
And everything was just... now, was there a dust in the air, or was it...
Yes.
There was a constant dust in the air, but there were no piles of dust there, just this piles of steel and nothing much else.
Pretty much.
All right, fine. And so basically you said that Building 7 was pretty well cleaned up, in about 6 weeks?
Correct.
And so I suppose the other buildings then were moved out very, very quickly. How do you think they were able to get so many demolition crews in there in a period of less than 24 hours?
Well, in the city, Turner Construction, and there's a Solvis, I can't think of all the names, but there's a couple of big construction companies in the city that has thousands of employees, and they volunteered their services to the state and the city, and they were called upon to do their job. If anything, they were acting as soldiers during wartime.
Sure. Well, I think everybody wanted to help at that time, and I know that a lot of people went down there. I felt an obligation to try to do something, to find some victims or something, and unfortunately they found only a couple that had survived, and even how they survived, we probably never really know. Do you have any idea how many people actually had alive that they did find there at the World Trade Center site?
No.
All right, fine. Well, now, certainly, you say there are there dozens of organizations of the survivors at the present time. Now, we're talking now about the construction crews. And I'm talking about the firemen, policemen, things like that. Or is there one overall organization that a lot of little splitter groups? Or how is this whole organization set up?
Are you speaking of mine or
what? No, I'm talking about the others, and not yours at all.
Most organizations that are set up are aimed at helping whatever their mission statement is. So if firemen helping firemen, policemen helping policemen, survivors group dealing with the survivors, the family members who lost, deceased people, they have their own group. And, they all pretty much stick to themselves. What I'm trying to stress is that all organizations should join together. I don't discriminate against anybody. I've helped cops, firemen. I've helped Red Cross members. I've helped, people that work for the Red Cross that are now sick. I've helped people that work for the city that are now sick. I don't discriminate against anybody. I will help anybody I can.
Was a lot of people there from the Red Cross?
Oh, yeah.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Feal, F-E-A-L, and he has his own organization to help the survivors. It's called the Feal Good Foundation. John was saying that there were a lot of people there from the city, that there were people there from the Red Cross, and that there were a fair number of people from the Red Cross. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for John. Well, what were the Red Cross people doing there? Were they helping the people who were working, or what were they actually doing?
Yeah, they were there for support. They were there as they were feeding us. They would counsel us. You name it. They would give us new work boots or gloves or just anything that you needed. It literally turned into, from all of the great people across this country, the donations that were coming in, I could literally get off the pile, walk about a quarter of a mile, and then there would just be a street filled with like a flea market. It looked literally like a flea market. You know, like when you go shopping with your wife or kid on the weekend?
Sure.
And if you needed a sweatshirt or if you needed gloves, you needed jeans, or you needed a new hard hat, it was all there for you. I mean, brand new. We're not just talking new stuff. And the Red Cross was there, you know, to give that stuff out. They were there to give out food. They would give it, you know, they had grief counselors, you know, and they did, you know what, in the beginning, the Red Cross did a superb job.
Well, you say in the beginning, did things change after a while or what? Oh, because you were only there really for 5 days, so you wouldn't know what happened after that.
My own personal experiences with the Red Cross, they left a bit of taste in my mouth, but overall, I think they did as good a job as they could. You know, look, 9/11 was unprecedented. Nobody was ever prepared for 9/11. I'm not an educated man, but in my mind, I've gone to 5 years of 9/11 University now. And I know the ins and outs, and I know the people that are real, and I know the people that helped, and I know the people that didn't help, and I know the governments that helped. And, you know, we sit here and, you know, we talk about the truth, and, you know, we could, you know, the federal government this, and they didn't do that, but there are still good people in government that are fighting for us, but there are a majority of people in government that aren't helping us, that can help us. But for the most part, the organizations like the Salvation Army and the Red Cross and Catholic Charities, they were there to help in the beginning. But as time gone by, that help slowly went away. And maybe you didn't need help that first year or that second year, but these people are getting sicker. Because you can't put a time frame on how sick these people are getting. And a lot of these people and these organizations aren't helping now. And this is only going to get worse. We're at 5 years. We're at 64 months. In 7 years and in 10 years, we're going to get sicker.
Well, tell me, are the people you mentioned, that they all, so many of them seem to have this esophageal regurgitation, this gastric reflux, are they having problems with their minds? Is there some sort of something that's affecting their minds too, or is it mostly the respiratory tract, their stomachs?
It's both. It's both. You got to understand, 90% of the 9/11 responders I help, they're all suffering from severe post-traumatic on top of their regular problems. So when you have post-traumatic, most of these guys are in panic mode and depressed. And when you're trying to deal with a physical injury or a respiratory problem or a cancer, and then you add that mental issue and the financial burden, everything gets accentuated. So their basic foundation for competent thinking is out the window. So you have men who men and women, who were used to saving lives or doing really important jobs, and now they're nothing more than a bowl of jelly who need help, and we're letting them rot away.
And, of course, what do you do? You mean you give them support, you try to direct them in the right direction, try to direct them where they can get help?
Correct. Absolutely. I get phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to commit suicide, you know, and I'll talk on the phone with them until daylight comes and I can get them into counseling.
Okay, is there any organized counseling available through the city, through the county, or through the government there at all? Or you have to do it on your own?
No, there's still 9/11 organizations that still offer free counseling, and they will get you to the nearest counselor. And that's one thing that hasn't been taken away from us is counseling and therapy and stuff like that. But for the most part, the funds have dried out for helping these guys pay bills because they haven't worked in 5 years. And, you know, a lot of these guys are suffering, losing their houses.
Well, can you get them onto Social Security disability? Are they eligible for that?
Here's the problem with Social Security. 90% of the people that apply for Social Security get denied the first time around. It's 90% of the people that appeal it, they win. But it's an 18-month process. But what we do, I go to my congressman who's done nothing but bend over backwards for us, and Congressman Bishop, who's my congressman, he helps me get these guys Social Security, because when Social Security gets a phone call from a congressman, that 18-month process gets expedited to 2 to 3 months.
Hey, that's great. Hey, hold on. We'll be back in just a moment, then we'll get right to Tom from Ohio. My telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY-464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and right now we've got Tom calling from Ohio. Hi, how are you doing tonight, Tom?
Oh, pretty good. I don't know the guest's name.
His name is John Feal, F-E-A-L.
John Feal.
F-E-A-L, right.
Have you talked to William Rodriguez, John?
Mr. Yes, Feal? I've met him a few times.
Do you agree with him?
Some things I do and some things I don't.
Who blew the building up, John?
Well, he doesn't. Nobody really knows that, Tom.
Oh, nobody knows?
No, nobody knows who did it. We don't know how it was done. We just have suspicions that something is not right.
Something is not right.
Right. And I don't think it was Osama bin Laden. So anything else? Did you have another question you wanted to ask?
No, that's it. Thank you all. Thank you, John.
Thank you, sir.
All right, fine. I don't think we wanted to pin you down and ask you who blew up the building, because I don't think anybody can make that answer. We just know that something's very strange about the whole story. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
All right, fine. So I think we just have to raise the question. But sometimes if you were too specific, then, of course, they'll use that to club you over the head with it. Well, as far as these people are concerned, and you've commented, of course, that many of them are just frantic. Have you dealt with people with this post-traumatic stress before? And I wonder if there's a toxic element to this. In other words, talk about our boys coming back from Iraq today, about a third of the 1 million people who've come back, Sam. They call it post-traumatic stress, but it's characterized, as you say, by panic attacks. But they can't think; their minds don't function right. And this is what you're seeing with the victims of working on the pile.
Yes, sir. Exact same thing.
And of course, are there any psychiatrists working with them, or simply is it just mostly counselors?
It's mostly counselors, but for the severe cases, you know, or whether you know they have good coverage or this and that, you know, some of them do go to actual psychiatrists or psychotherapist, or, you know. But for the most part, it's 9/11 counselors who were trained, you know, to help 9/11 responders. And in my mind, those people need counseling, because after they're done helping the 9/11 responders, they're fried.
Well, I know. I remember when I was going to medical school and I had to work in the psychiatric hospital, and I couldn't do it. I mean, I'd get so emotionally involved with all the people that I knew I was never going to be a psychiatrist.
Personally, I went to therapy for 1 year. And I did it without taking medication, and you're a doctor, so you know, I did EMDR. And EMDR is whether you want to do the sight, touch, smell, sound. And, everybody kept calling me a hero, and I don't think I'm a hero.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was simply saying that he went to therapy for a year because of his emotional response to what he'd gone through, not only, of course, with his foot and all the repeated surgeries, had 30 or 40 surgeries on his feet, but, simply just being there and being part of this scene of total devastation. Anyway, you got through this without taking any treatment, and do you think you've got it pretty well licked at the present time, or do you still have a tendency to get panic attacks?
I licked it, and I did it without medication, but my therapy now is helping 9/11 responders, and if that was taken away from me, I would probably be in the same boat they are.
I'll tell you what, I think that's really so important that you're there to help these people, and the great tragedy is that they really don't know quite where to turn. Are there any other organizations like yours that are there just to give somebody a place to go, somebody who really cares?
Sure, absolutely. There's other 9/11 organizations that, you know, will get you free counseling. But since the Feel Good Foundation, my board members are made up of 9/11 responders. I chose to have 9/11 responders who suffer like me to turn around and help others. So we don't have the education or the finances to help these people like that. But we will direct them to 9/11 organizations that offer that free counseling.
All right,
That's how I keep the good rapport with everybody.
Okay, fine. Well, I telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Have you had a chance to talk to the people who worked on the Twin Towers themselves and what they found or what they saw when they were there?
They all say the same thing, body parts. Everything's body parts. If you talk to anybody that worked directly on the on Tower 1 and 2, North, South, Tower, whatever you want to call it, they all say the same thing, you know. They would go through the pile and they found the body part. Body, everything was body part. And all of these guys are fried. All of these guys are messed up in the head. And it's a shame. It's just a shame.
And so they you know, they just find an arm or a leg, but you know, what happened to the rest of the bodies? That's the thing. They just sort of, and of course there are 1,100 bodies that have never been found. That's one of the really frightening things about this whole story, and one of the unexplained things that nobody wants to talk about. 1,100 bodies that have never been found. I mean, they found parts of other bodies, maybe an arm or a leg, and they were able to identify it, but 1,100 that they have never found or identified. That sounds mighty strange to me. Do a lot of the people out there that you've talked to have this feeling that we have never gotten the whole truth about what happened that day?
Everybody. Everybody that opens up and honestly talks, you know, there's basic conversation, and then there's conversation in support groups, and then there's conversations behind closed doors, and everybody has that same thing. You know, whether all of the organizations that want the truth, what happened that day and the days leading up to 9/11 or the 9/11 response, we all seek the truth. We want to know why it happened and why are we being treated like this now. And no one just wants to come out and give straight answers. And I wish somebody in Washington would grow a set of Abe Lincolns and say, look, we're sorry, this is what happened, and this is what we want to do for you. But no one wants to do that.
Well, I don't think anybody really dares really get into what really happened that morning, because it's just so many inconsistencies to the story as we've been told it. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And of course, can you imagine, you know, going in there as John did on the evening of the 12th, of the afternoon, late afternoon of the 12th, and here's this gigantic pile of the iron that was in building number 6, 7 where he was working, but not much of anything else. So was basically the debris where you were a lot different than the debris that were over there by the where the Twin Towers came down?
Yes.
Now,
absolutely.
Do you have any idea why that was?
No, I can't explain it. I cannot explain it.
Because obviously it sounds like a lot of the dust, you know, a lot of the cement dust or whatever it was.
Well, at the towers, at 1 and 2, they had debris from the buildings. They actually had debris from the buildings. You know, like, and there were a lot of personal belongings, and there were a lot of, you know, office stuff. But from Site 7, it was just steel. I don't know if you've ever seen the picture of me standing in front of Building 7, but if you look behind me, it's just all steel.
It's just all this big, great big massive pile of the steel there that, of course, and then, of course, it, but the thing is that it was so hot. I mean, this is really what's so strange. Did you have any question when you were there as to why the steel kept being so hot for so long? Because there certainly, you would think that it would cool down in fairly short order.
At the time, I didn't think about it. It wasn't until a while back after being out of the hospital that, like, why was that steel so hot? Why was it burning when it was just steel? If I look back now, hindsight's 20/20, you know, there are a lot of questions I have that I wish were answered, but I wish I would have really, really drilled somebody with questions while I was there, but it was such a fast-paced atmosphere. And everybody was working frantically to, you know, clean up New York and save everybody.
And so basically the steel wasn't actually burning, was it? Or was it just terribly hot? Or there's no way that steel itself can burn, is there?
No. Some of the steel was just so red it was hot.
It was hot?
Yeah.
I mean, well, you've been in other demolitions. Have you ever encountered red steel? I mean, red hot steel?
Only from torching it.
But of course, that this was just laying there, and it's red hot before you even get around to torching it. What happened when, of course, you picked it up and you brought it over there, and you got to cut it up into 10, 20-foot lengths? I mean, was the steel just red hot as you were even before you started torching it?
No, I'm talking the steel, like, on the bottom of the pile.
Okay, fine. This was the top of the pile then pretty well cooled down?
No, it was still smoldering.
It was, really was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then they're pouring water on this to try to cool it off. And
right.
So they can cool it off, though, that so you actually can pick it up and then cut it.
Correct.
All right. Now, we've heard people say that if the steel was really that hot, that it would simply jam the hydraulic mechanism on the whatever you're using to move it. I don't know, using buckets.
A lot of the machines did have those problems.
They did.
They bought, while I was there, they were bringing machines in from Michigan. I met a guy from Michigan. I met a guy from Minnesota. I met a guy, maybe 8 or 10 guys from Pennsylvania. They were bringing in machines from everywhere. They were bringing in machines that I never saw that were picking this pile. And these guys were really good at what they did. I was amazed at what they did.
What is it? Some of the hydraulic mechanism on those machines actually freeze up because of the heat?
The hoses would melt.
The hoses would actually melt on these machines because of the intense heat.
And the tracks, some of those machines, you know, when the piles started coming down and we started moving stuff around and the machines were getting on top of the piles, the tracks on the machines would melt.
That's the strangest thing in the world. We've heard these stories, but hearing it from somebody who was actually there, I mean, you know, ordinarily you would think that the steel would cool off, you know, in a matter of a few hours.
No. No, it did it in front of me, so, you know, I'm just telling you what I saw.
Well, you're in demolition. I mean, you've done this before. Had you ever been in buildings that have been, had a fire in them before, and steel buildings?
No.
All right, so you really wouldn't have any experience on that. Well, maybe somebody else out there knows something about fire in steel buildings and how long the steel remains hot. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. How many, you say about 300 people have died. When I mentioned there were 400 cancers, you said the number is higher than that. Do you have any idea how high the cancer incidence is among the people who survived? And I'm talking about now the people who worked on the pile?
David Werby will say that there's hundreds and hundreds of people with cancer, more than 300 or 400. But David Werby has also said that over 300 of his clients have died. But he doesn't disclose that information. And I'm assuming when it does finally go to court and they have the day in court, all of that will come out.
Well, I just read something recently, and you know, all I know is what I read in the paper. But the figure is 400, something like 8,000 clients, 400 with cancer. Now it may be a lot higher than that. All I know is just what I'd read here some time ago. But anyway, why would all these people get cancer? This is not normal at all. Was anybody checking? In any way, you don't know whether anybody was checking for radiation. Radiation would, of course, influence the immune system. Well, there must have been something there that would dramatically decrease the immunity of the people. Their immune response would make them more susceptible to cancer.
Oh, I agree with you.
Has there been any scientific studies to find out what the common denominator is for all of this?
You would have to ask somebody, a doctor from Mount Sinai, or an independent doctor, or somebody who's done actual, research on that. But, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or an 8-year medical degree to figure out that everything we swallowed has caused respiratory and cancer.
Right. Well, I'd sure like to know what, you know, was it the asbestos? Was it the mercury? I mean, what were the mercury levels there? Because apparently a lot of fluorescent lights and all the fluorescent lights would have mercury in them. Or was there something there that we just don't understand that was involved with this? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or out here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. How long did it take them to get the streets around that area cleaned up? Because the pictures we've seen, you know, right after the buildings came down, of course, you see the dust there everywhere along the streets and all the papers and things like that. Was that pretty well cleaned up in a couple of days?
They had the actual ground zero, which was a few blocks. You know, the actual ground zero was a few blocks, but it was probably like 8 blocks each way that I could see. That was like a ghost town, and it just was dusty. But for the most part, you know, there was no debris.
How soon do you think people started coming back? How soon did they come back to school? Or how soon did they come into these adjacent office buildings?
Not while I was there.
All right.
And,
so.
And then once again, I spent 2 months in the hospital, so I lost touch with civilization.
I bet you did. I'm sure that was really a pretty frightening thing, especially when they're talking about gangrene setting in there.
But I didn't know what gangrene. I thought gangrene was something from like the 1800s when you had a gunshot wound to the belly. You know, watching TV shows. You know, when they told me I was septic and I had organs shut down and you know I might die, I was like, you got to be kidding me. I thought I was John Wayne. I thought I was invincible.
Well, tell me, did your legs get hit at all, and was it just primarily your feet? Because sometimes, you know, of course, when a crushing injury to the legs will cause a rhabdomyolysis, and then the pigment gets in the kidneys.
What happened was when my foot was crushed, the good doctors at Bellevue put 5 pins through my toes, and you're not supposed to pin a crushed injury, and there was no blood flow for the pins, and those pins caused gangrene. So when they sent me to North Shore University, the doctor pulled those pins out and said, son, you got gangrene.
Okay. Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Will, who's calling from Missouri. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
Well, thank you for taking my call the second time, Dr. Stan. But I do have another question, and I'd like to ask John. John, were you in a union there? Are you union labor?
No, sir. I was management, so one, I couldn't, you know, union, but I did hold a 138 book.
Okay.
But I wasn't there representing the 138.
Okay, now on the site, do you know whether there were union workers, iron workers, carpenters, and teamsters?
Absolutely.
Okay, they were there. Were they getting paid or were they volunteering their time?
Getting paid.
Do you remember whether or not there were safety meetings usually held in the morning or after work?
I believe there was.
And how about MSDS sheets and stuff like that? Did they have those available for the people, and were they talking about them? Do you remember?
That I don't.
Okay, well, thank you very much. That's the question I had. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Where were you going with all that question?
Well, because there are certain violations that are going on in this whole thing that have to do with standard building practices. And in regards to the safety issues and how the union was working with their people would be dependent on whether or not the union could be held harmless in this as well. So that was why I was inquiring that way.
All right, fine. Thanks very much. And if you come up with anything on that, Will, why let us know.
I certainly will, Dr.
Okay.
Stan.
Bye-bye. And we've got time probably for one more call. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here at 464-8295. And here we're having an opportunity to get a first-hand view of what it was like. And here there's this gigantic pile of steel there that's all that's left of the building. Now, John had said that over in the other, where the World Trade Center was, there was a lot of some personal items. Of course, there were some body parts that they found. But, you know, a lot of the bodies were not found, but they did find some body parts, and that was pretty traumatic. But where he was, of course, everybody had been evacuated from the building, but you'd expect there'd be a lot of, you know, the office products, the desks, the telephones, the computers, and things of that sort. But you really didn't come across anything like that?
No. No, sir.
And that, of course, is really what's sort of strange. Do you have any explanation why that might have been? Because you would think that they would have, you know, the broken parts would have been there. Unless, of course, it's somehow or other they'd been vaporized or something of that sort. I'm sure at the time you were just trying to get the job done, but looking back on it, I mean, how can we explain the fact that this was a building? It had all sorts of things in it. It had the FBI office, CIA office, had Mayor Giuliani's command center, probably a lot of other government agencies. They would have had equipment.
Keep in mind, when I was injured on the 17th, that pile was still substantially a few stories high, and we were still pulling from it. So if there was any of those things that I did not see visually, it could have been underneath all of that steel. But from when I was there, all I saw was steel, nothing else, just broken, twisted, or clean steel.
Well, now, of course, on the Twin Towers, they had an outer steel frame, and then they had the inner steel pillars. With your building, you didn't have an outer steel frame? It was just all made just steel beams.
Correct.
All right. So the construction of the Twin Towers was entirely different than the construction of the building where John was working. Okay. Well, Chris, would you like to get your website up once again so people would know how to get in touch with you?
If anybody wants to go to the website, it's feelgoodfoundation.com, F-E-A-L, goodfoundation.com, and you can see all the great work we're doing to help 9/11 responders. And if there are 9/11 responders listening that need help, we'll go to bat for them and we'll help them the best that we can.
All right, fine. And Chris, are there any articles or anything else of that sort up on the website?
There's a whole bunch of articles up there. I'm trying to educate everybody and spread awareness and let everybody know that there are 9/11 responders out there that are sick and dying that need your help.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program this evening with John Field. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's been a fascinating almost 2 hours now with John, and I appreciate it. It's late at night. I appreciate his staying up with us. What's the message you would like to certainly leave with our listeners this evening? And you got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
On September 11, 2001, as a country, we took one on the chin. And as resilient as we are and tenacious, we're a great country because of the people, not because of the government. And we moved forward, and I have no problem with moving forward, but when you move forward, let's not forget what you leave behind. And what we're leaving behind are thousands of heroes that are sick and dying. And hopefully with a new government and a new Congress and Senate, that we'll actually get some bills and laws passed where, you know, some of these guys can get the help that they deserve. And there are great leaders and elected officials in New York, like Congresswoman Maloney and Senator Clinton, that are actually out there helping and fighting for us. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that 2007 9/11 responders get a little relief.
Well, now, what has Hillary Clinton been doing? Senator Clinton, what has she been doing to help?
Trying to pass. She just introduced a new bill last week with Senator Schumer for $2 billion for federal funding for 9/11 responders. And they asked the president to put it on his budget. Will it happen? The 5 years of me that's seen this go on, I'm going to say no, it's not going to happen. But she's at least trying, and I hope this woman pulls it off.
And she has actually submitted the legislation, and are they going to appropriate the money, or how is it going to work? Do you have any idea?
No, sir.
All right, fine. But she is going to at least try to get some legislation passed.
She's been trying for the last couple of years, and Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney has been the forefront leader in helping 9/11 responders. She's had more bills passed down and shot down, you know, because of language or, you know, just got shot right out of Congress. That lady keeps fighting for us, and I'll stand beside her and I'll fight alongside her to help these 9/11 responders.
So basically, they put the legislation. Why doesn't it get passed? Is it just nobody cares out there? Or what's
pretty much
going?
A Republican in Minnesota or a Republican in Iowa doesn't care about what's happening in New York. That's the bottom line. That is the bottom line. But if it happened in their state, they'd be asking for this money.
All right, fine. Of course, if the money is appropriated, I just hope it would be certainly dispersed wisely, and you know, so that all the people who need the help would be able to get it. And the fact that the families of the people who perished in the Twin Towers buildings, you know, certainly they got their $2 million, you should get something. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Field. John, thank you so very much for being with us. I really appreciate it, and maybe we can get you on some of our other programs. I'd like our listeners for our other programs to hear what you have to say.
I appreciate it, sir.
God bless you. Good night,
thank
John.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, here is a very, very courageous and gutsy guy, and we appreciate the fact that he's been on the front lines, and he's there trying to help the other responders. So, again, our guest was John Feel, and it's the Feel Good Foundation. Now, if you'd like to really to understand what happened on 9/11, let me suggest my pamphlets. There are three of them. They're simply compilations of newsletters we wrote. It's Foreknowledge 9/11. Did they know the attack was coming? Yes. They'd actually been simulating attacks on the World Trade Center. In fact, they'd been simulating attacks where planes had been hijacked and they were going to be flown into the World Trade Center. And these were the military exercises, or military exercises going on that very morning. The fact that most Americans have not been told that, how could they suppress that, and why did they suppress that information about the military exercises that were held on the morning of 9/11 that simulated the hijacking of an airplane? And why has everything been sealed? Actually, there were 1,200 people who testified before the 9/11 Commission. Less than 100 of them ever were allowed to testify in public. And over 1,100 people's testimony was sealed for 50 years. Why did they want to seal it for 50 years? And I think you, out there in the listening audience, I hope you realize why. Well, you certainly want to read our August, September, October, November newsletters, and the December newsletter will be there soon. That'll be the end. We're going to put the 5 newsletters into a pamphlet, and hopefully they will explain to you what really happened that day. But you have our permission to pull down the August, September, October, and November newsletters now and copy them and disseminate them. Help us try to get people to think, because if we don't understand what happened on 9/11, why, we are going to very soon be at war with Iran. This may very well provoke massive attacks on the United States, either from other countries or from Iran or from their Muslim allies throughout the world. And, of course, this could have a devastating effect on the very survival of our country. And as I've often said, there is a spiritual component to what's going on today. Men and women become accomplices of the evils they fail to oppose. Most Americans weren't concerned the fact that almost 2 million Iraqis died between 1990 and 1995 because of the American sanctions. About 500,000 Iraqi children perished during that time. Are you concerned? Are you concerned about the 600,000 Iraqis who died unnecessarily since America went in to liberate the country? Are you concerned because, well, it took 695,000 American troops were sent during the first Gulf War simply to shoo the Iraqi forces out of Kuwait. And yet we sent in only 140,000 troops to take and occupy Iraq. And then, of course, we dissolved the police force, the military, and the civil service. With 140,000 troops, we were supposed to run the whole country. When General Allenby took Palestine back in 1918, he declared martial law and kept martial law on permanently. We have not done that. In fact, we have not done anything that is logical at all to try to control this. There are at least 20 private armies there that are operating in Baghdad. If you're trying to bring law and order, why do you allow all these private armies, people running around with weapons? In Afghanistan, we're fighting the Taliban, who are being funded and trained in Pakistan. And we're funding the Pakistan government that's training and funding the Taliban who are killing our boys in Afghanistan. What's wrong with this picture? Maybe nothing as it appears to be. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, read our newsletters, get the book, The Devil's Game. That's The Devil's Game. Get the book, See No Evil by Robert Baer. And then pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.